Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. At the moment, France is in the front lines of that war for the free world, as it has been from time to time over the years. Once again, the people of not only Paris, but now Nice, have been subjected to the jihad, violent, barbaric attacks against innocent civilians in the name of the Islamic State or simply Allah. Let's talk with one of the people who is, by my lights, among the most thoughtful, intelligent, knowledgeable, and courageous observers and chroniclers of our times. He is Michel Gerfinkiel. He is the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, which is a conservative think tank in France. He is also associated with the Middle East Forum here in the United States, where he is a Shulman Ginsburg Fellow. He is the editor-in-chief of Valeurs Actuelles, a conservative newsweekly in France, and the author of numerous books, including A Duty of Memory, Can Israel Survive, and Cooking the Lobster, which is an interesting one to boot. Michel, welcome back. Thank you so much for giving us a full hour of your time today to talk about, France most immediately. We'll get on to Turkey and other issues as well. But it's great to have you back, sir.
My pleasure, Frank.
Let's start with the attack in Nice. I know that the French are still reeling from the carnage of a truck-delivered act of jihad. Was this, as you read it, Michel, simply the act, incomprehensible, of a lone individual, perhaps somewhat deranged, or was there something else motivating him and going on here?
There is now growing evidence that it was not the action of some lone wolf or some madman. There is evidence that the guy, first of all, comes from a radical Islamist background in Tunisia, and second, that the entire operation obviously needed a lot of external support. So now the French police is rather coming close to the view that this is a full-fledged terrorist operation where one man acted on behalf of a much larger network.
The Islamic State has, in just the past few hours, declared him to be one of its soldiers. But whether he was formally tied to that jihadist organization or not, Michel, would it not be more accurate to describe him as someone animated by the same ideology that essentially all jihadists share?
Well, what is clear is, as I just said, that his family background is staunchly Islamist in Tunisia. And in fact, his father has been an important member and activist with the Tunisian Islamist Party, which itself is close to the Muslim Brethren and so on. Now, you know what the Islamic State organization really is. It's a kind of galaxy that is simply federating a lot of Islamist groups. What you have is the Islamist ideology. What you have is a lot of autonomous cells and branches, and they tend to federate around the most effective or the most anti-Western, anti-Christian, anti-Jewish leader at the moment. It used to be Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. Now it is the Islamic State. Tomorrow it might be a third operation. So we don't have evidence that every operation that is claimed by the Islamic State has been, in fact, masterminded by the Islamic State as such. But what we know is that the Islamic State and the Islamist organizations work as a kind of loose confederacy of autonomous groups which share the same ideology and the same tactics and the same strategic indoctrination and the same practical training on the ground. So those are things that we know for sure.
This is such an important point. This puts into context this whole idea that there really are such things as these lone wolves, or as we're being told now, I gather, as a result of some of the police inquiries in France, Michel Garfinkel, that this guy was very rapidly radicalized, that somehow he went from 0 to 60 almost overnight. What you've described here is a galaxy is the way you've called it, that has people operating in it, imbued with its tenets, called to act upon them, specifically, you know, Sharia's requirement for jihad, in such ways as they can, whether as members of groups or as individuals or even under the sponsorship of states. Have I got that right?
We certainly need to know more about this man, and we will learn more about his whereabouts. But again and again, it's not a case of somebody who was a clean guy and got radicalized. There is what we know is that he comes from a radical background, and the fact that for a period of time he was seen as non-observant, non-religious, and so on, doesn't mean much, because it is a usual tactics by the Islamists to play as normal people for a while. There was a tragedy a few weeks ago, fortnight ago, in Israel, fortnight or maybe a little bit more time in Israel, where a group of Islamists killed a lot of people at a cafe and restaurant place in Tel Aviv called Sarona. Now, the people, those murderers have been, in fact, arrested by the Israeli police and interrogated, and what they explain very well that in order to do their job as murderers, they first bought expensive suits. They got shaved the modern way, and they behaved as completely, a secular and up-to-date people in Tel Aviv. So, again, it might simply be part of the usual tactics of the Islamists to pretend to be an easygoing person for a while, and in order to not to be suspected by the French police and by the environment where these people are hiding in order to get prepared for their actions.
Yeah. So what you've just described, Michel Garfinkel, is something that poses even further challenges to the law enforcement community, not just in your country of France, but here as well, worldwide, really, in terms of the tradecraft of the jihadists, that they need not outfit themselves in the traditional dress or the jewelry or the beards or the henna in their hair or what have you, the telltale signs. If we were to look for them, mind you, we're not allowed to look at them or take them into account in this country at the moment. This is a phenomenon we call Sino Sharia, the subject of a new book at the Center for Security Policy that I encourage people to take a look at. It's available online at securefreedom.org for free, if you choose. Michelle, when we come back, we have to take a short break here. We'll talk about this support business that you've alluded to, the kind of infrastructure that is built in France, and for that matter here, that is enabling the violent jihad. That and more with Michelle Gerfinkel of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute and Valeur Actuelle, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realized their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're visiting for a full hour with one of the most perspicacious men I know, in Europe most especially, Michel Gerfinkel. He is a think tank denizen as well as a journalist, an author, and a man that we turn to particularly for his insights about, well, the war for the free world's manifestations in France and elsewhere in Europe. He is, of course, based there. Michel, again, welcome. Let me ask you, you mentioned in the first block that the murderer, the jihadist in Nice, now appears to have been drawing upon a support network of some kind to perpetrate this this ghastly use of a truck to murder scores of people, innocents, children, even, in the course of the Bastille Day celebrations. What do we know about that support network at this point?
Well, we don't know much, except that we know that the police is now convinced that there has been something like a support network. What is self-evident is that it's not such an easy thing to rent a refrigerated truck for a period of time. You must identify, you must make a deposit, and the deposit is quite considerable, and so on and so on. So it means that first of all, this guy knew how to proceed and was probably given the means to rent that truck and so on. The fact that this guy had an experience as a bus driver or a truck driver has to be taken into account as well. But again, even people who have the special license to drive trucks cannot so easily rent a truck, especially this kind of trucks, which are extremely expensive and which cannot be so easily rented. Again and again, there is a deposit and so on and so on.
Yeah, it's evidence of considerable forethought for sure, and probably operational support. And I want to broaden the lens a little bit as we discuss this further, Michelle, to assess whether the fact that there are something like 18 mosques in the area of Nice, most of which are associated with a Muslim Brotherhood Front organization. And I'm told, at least as of 2006, some four different areas of the Alpes-Maritimes province, in which Nice is, of course, located, that had then what were recognized by the French government as zones urbaines sensibles, these sensitive urban zones, or some would call them no-go zones. Would you talk about what's going on with respect to those sorts of considerations and whether they may have had a factor, a role to play in all of this?
Well, first of all, I would like to stress the fact that, of course, among the victims of the Nice terrorist attack, there were quite a lot of Muslims as well as of non-Muslims. Actually, the first person to be killed in Nice on that terrible evening was a young Muslim woman known as Fatima. What I would like also to stress is that the real question is how come again and again that the mosques that are operating all over the country cannot come to bring themselves to the something as evident as paying respect to the victims and saying that they cannot condone any act of terror, even if done in the name, let's say, the usurped name of the Muslim religion. And as a matter of fact, there is an organization in France known as the Conference of French Imams, and the vice chairman of this organization, who himself is one of the French leading imams, resigned on Saturday because he was shocked that his own organization, which is known to be a moderate organization, did not express a condolence to the population in Nice, even if, for instance, Muslims had been killed by this terrible murderer on the Bastille Day evening.
Well, you know, this is shocking, Michelle, but I guess I'm somewhat surprised at is in the United States, at least, it is a rather routine matter for these Islamist groups, the mosques and imams and so on, to trot out and denounce terror after such an attack. But here, at least, we find that it isn't always clear what they're denouncing is the specific act of jihad, that is considered to be a legitimate activity, in fact, an obligatory activity under Sharia. So this imam, you know, bailing out on this organization is perhaps a heartening sign that someone is actually taking it beyond just easy rhetoric, even though many of the others in France are not engaged even in that.
You know, a lot of leading imams in France who are known to be affiliated to the Muslim Brethren or any kind of other fundamentalist Islamist brotherhood have developed a routine to say that they are law-abiding, that they respect the law of the country, that Muslims should not go against the law, and that all kind of violence is to be repudiated by Muslims. So they do engage in such rhetorics. But at the same time, they are still very reluctant to express a blank condemnation for every act of terror. And the reason is that they claim, anytime you ask them about that and they are willing to give an answer, they say, we are not at ease because people are immediately saying that it is Islam itself which is murderous. And whereas in that case, in that this case or that case, it was a madman, or it was a man who was not an observant Muslim, or there is suspicion that the operation was not at all, I mean, the operation of Muslims, but rather of, you know, the propensity of many Muslims to enter, to go into very intricate conspiracy explanations.
The Jews, among others, and the CIA, of course.
Yes, well, yes, but I mean, it's the American government, it's the British Secret Service, it's the Jews, it's the Zionists, it's and so on. But it's never the Muslims, you see.
Hey, Michelle, we have to pause for just a second more. Let's pick this up on the other side, because I do want to drill down a bit on this point that not all Muslims engage in this kind of behavior, needless to say, or condone it, but the authorities of the faith do. And unfortunately, that seems to be the case with respect to many of these mosques, at least the ones the Brotherhoods have established. That and more with Michelle Garfinkel of Valeur Actuelle right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. More police officers ambushed, this time in Baton Rouge at the hands of a member of the Nation of Islam, a group that promotes black separatism and Sharia supremacism. It turns out that such a combination is not confined to Louis Farrakhan's cult. There is now at work in America a true red-green-black axis, bringing together radical leftists, Islamists, and increasingly violent inciters of black victimhood. A prime representative of this axis is Khalila Sabra. She's a black convert to Islam. She works for the Muslim Brotherhood's Muslim American Society and helps the Obama administration bring refugees here. Last December, Sabra exhorted a like-minded crowd by noting that, quote, "We are the community that staged a revolution across the world," unquote, then asked, quote, "Why can't we have that revolution here?" unquote. And let's stop, that's just what the red-green-black axis will try to do. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Michelle Garfinkel is our guest. He is an accomplished author of numerous books. He is very active in terms of his writings in periodical literature, notably at Valeur Actuelle. He is a Shulman Ginsberg Fellow at the Middle East Forum in the United States, but also the founder and president of the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute in France. And Michelle, we were just talking about how these Muslim authorities in France, for want of a better term, may not be representing all Muslims there, certainly not all Muslims worldwide, and yet they seem to be drawing upon the authoritative texts and traditions and practices of the faith, you know, going back over a millennium, and sort of enshrined in this doctrine that they call Sharia. As you look at this and as you listen to these imams and so on, I wonder whether the kind of deflections, the kind of disinformation, I guess you'd say, that they engage in are misleading still the French as to what's going on here, or whether they're beginning to wise up.
Well, it's a very difficult question. My personal view, and this is not necessarily a view that is very popular in France, I wonder whether the separation of church and state, which was finalized in France 112 years ago in in 1905. I wonder whether this law should not be amended in many ways. I would think that the religion should come much more closely under the scrutiny of the state, and that the state should, in fact, take care of the funding of religious institutions in France, including mosques. Of course, there will be underground mosques that will somehow try to escape the control of the state, but being underground mosques will turn them into suspect organization, and the police will then be much more at ease to engage investigation or all kind of legal repression against them. This is a view which is not popular in France because the French are absolutely convinced that what they call laïcité, secularity, the complete separation of state and church, is the last wall, the last rampart against Islamization. But I tend to take a different view. At one point, you must exert a real control of the Muslim religious organizations. I believe that for many reasons it might have been a mistake to engage into a much more radical separation of church and state 100 years ago.
This is a very interesting question. I'm sure it will be wildly controversial on this side of the Atlantic, Michel, as well as on your side in France. But I do think what we're beginning to have to come to grips with is this institutionalization within mosques, not all of them, and this dominance within the Muslim community. Again, not all Muslims, but nonetheless, whatever the various sects and strains and, you know, cults and so on within that community, that galaxy, if you will, there is this unifying phenomenon of a shared doctrine that they call Sharia. And it certainly is the case that we are on both sides of the Atlantic, indeed worldwide, now increasingly confronting the reality that those who believe it is God's will that they follow that doctrine must engage in jihad of either the violent kind or what's known as the hijra, the immigration kind, or zakat, material support kind, or what the Brotherhood, as you know, calls the civilization jihad kind, a sort of subversive, stealthy, seditious sort. And Michel, let me just ask before we move to the next block. I do want to just ask about this problem of mosques and of areas that have essentially become enclaves in which the authorities have limited control or certainly limited appetite to enter. Where are you in France at this point with respect to surveillance of these mosques and the ability of the authorities to go anywhere in France after not just this latest attack in Nice, of course, but the previous ones in Paris as well?
Well, it is an established fact that very large areas all over France, and I would say probably all over most European countries, any European country where there is a sizable Muslim community, at least, we have enclaves. We have places where de facto the real authority has switched from the French government or any other European government to the local Muslim society. Now, I'm not saying that mosques are ruling other parts of France. It's not mosques. It's a very complex interaction of communities, mosques, and all kind of underground or criminal organization. What many Muslims in France, those Muslims who in fact describe themselves as French citizens of Muslim origin, who claim to be Muslim but claim also to be and say they want to be to integrate French society. What they themselves say is that you cannot be a free person if you stay with a Muslim-dominated community. In order to be free, they have to move to places where Muslims are not the majority, and this is a very difficult situation, because it's not just a matter of I would say neighborhoods. We talk in France about the suburbs, because and this is a difference with America. Suburbs tend to be poorer and more immigrant oriented in France than the inner city, but I believe it's now a spreading phenomenon. Some people have pointed to the fact that, for instance, the countryside of France, which is somehow desertified, we don't have as many farmers as we used to have, tends to be more and more, should I say, colonized by Muslim communities, who first of all think that the land and the cost of living are cheaper in the countryside, and then think that it's easier to live as Muslims outside the big cities, and so on and so on. So we have a very, very real problem that is growing, and which is not just the problem of mosques. Mosques can be...
I agree. Let's pause for just a second, Michel. This is really critical, and the politics of all of this in France and more broadly in Europe is what we'll talk about next with Michel Garfinkel. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest is Michel Garfinkel, a courageous as well as extraordinarily thoughtful and articulate observer of what is happening in his native France, where he runs the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute. He is also the editor-in-chief of Valeurs Actuelles, a newsweekly. And Michel, you've been laying out a rather grim portrait of what is happening inside France, this sort of demographic transformation of the place. By some estimates, there are now 10% of the population are Muslims. The spread from the banlieues, they're called, the suburbs, into rural areas of Muslim populations, and with it, I assume, some of this sort of phenomenon of no-go zones, if you will, or at least more and more sort of Sharia-adherent enclaves. It's more than mosques. You're absolutely right. How is the French polity responding to these sorts of phenomena. I know we had the French Prime Minister the other day say, you just have to get used to terrorism. Is that the response of most Frenchmen, do you think, or is there a political shift taking place in response?
Well, the main problem the French government is facing now when it comes to fighting terrorism is that he has not enough manpower. The French Minister of the Interior and the French Minister of Defense both called for members of the operational reserve to join the army because the army is in a dire need of more people being able to fight. Now, when you look at the numbers are simply ridiculous because the entire manpower that can be mobilized through calling the operational reserves doesn't exceed 9,000 people. The entire operational forces of France, the combined military and home security forces, amount to less than 250,000 persons, which is very low. There should be, I'm talking from authorized sources, from the first reports I've seen on the military and domestic security needs. At long last, a few tens of thousands of personnel that we need almost instantly. So I believe the first priority for France to be active, to be able to do some efficient action against the terrorist networks is in fact to expand the military and domestic security forces. My own estimation is that those personnel have to be doubled in the course of 3 to 4 years. That's an absolute requirement.
This is made all the more urgent, of course, against the backdrop of the population of the possible threat growing by the day.
Then we enter a further question. When we look at the present situation, we realize that about 20% of the police force and the military forces of France are Muslim. Since both the police and the military forces are based on volunteer personnel, certain category of people are more likely to be recruited than other category of people. There is no discrimination whatsoever in recruitment. And just like in many countries, you may have a problem, and I believe that's the case of the United States, a very important part of the armed forces or the police comes from the ethnic minorities. So we have a similar problem which is growing in France. And sure enough, the military or the police authorities are very careful about their own personnel, and they tend to dismiss people who do not look like being entirely fit for their job. And again, we have problematic figures. We know that, in fact, the incidence of dismissals is much higher among the Muslim members of the police and military forces. So we have a very real problem because the younger the population in France, the more important the percentage of Muslims. Nationwide, we have barely 10% of the population which is Muslim. But when we go down to people under the age of 20, we do have 20% nationwide, and in many areas it may rise to 30% or even in some specific case 50%.
Michelle Garfinkel, this is indeed a challenge of the first order for not just the law enforcement personnel, but for the country. There has been evidence that one of the responses to it has been the rise of the Le Pen party. Talk a bit about the new right, as they're called, and the possibilities of their growing influence and power in the face of clearly bad news for a lot of Frenchmen along these lines.
I believe that by now the classic left, which means the Socialist Party of President Hollande and Prime Minister Valls, is a spent force in France. Nobody is trusting them anymore. There was a kind of last streak of confidence, maybe after November 13 last year. The president looked as if he would react forcefully to the murderous attacks in Paris, the massacres in Paris. But I would say that the global public opinion has been very much disappointed by his attitude. So I believe that the classic socialist left is not going to provide an answer next year at the election. What we have is the National Front of Mrs. Marine Le Pen, which is growing, and we have the classic right. The classic right today, as of today, is divided. There is no it is as divided as the Republican Party was a couple of months ago.
Or maybe today, for that matter.
Nobody knows who is going to be the candidate. There are primaries that are supposed to take place, and there are at least four or five candidates to be the presidential conservative candidate next year. Whether one of these candidates will draw confidence, will express this kind of magnetism or charisma which is needed today is still problematic.
Remains to be seen. But it sounds as though there's going to be a shift rightward, in part in response to all of this. And you'll be watching that closely at Valeurs Actuelles, of course, Michelle Garfinkel, as will we on this side of the pond. And we'll be talking with you about it, I know. We're going to pause for one last break. When we come back, I do want to turn to one other problem now much in evidence, and that is what is up with Turkey. We'll talk with Michelle Garfinkel about that and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our final installment of this very special conversation with Michelle Garfinkel, whose expertise and thoughtful commentary is extraordinarily prized, I believe, both in France and among those of us who have come to know it in the States. We're always pleased to have him visiting with us. He is the Shulman Ginsberg Fellow at the highly regarded Middle East Forum in Philadelphia, as well as the founder and president of his own think tank in France, the Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute. You can read his writings at Valeurs Actuelles. And in French, a number of books, including Can Israel Survive new rules of the game. Let me turn quickly, in our last bit of this conversation with you, Michelle, to Turkey. Of course, in recent days, there was a coup, we're told, that was stopped by the president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and his supporters. Was this actually a coup, do you think, or was it something else altogether?
Well, what I can say is that, of course, when we heard in Paris about a coup attempt in Turkey, I called my friends and some very close friends in Ankara and Istanbul, and I called them and asked them about what was going on. And what they told me was that everybody in Turkey was absolutely convinced that that was a staged coup. It looked really more like kind of pre-organized operation than in order to turn Erdogan into a dictator than anything else. You see, for instance, the first move of the Erdogan administration after the coup was crushed was to dismiss 3,000 judges all over the country. And this is a very strange reaction. Why should you dismiss judges ahead of anybody else? You know, so this is how many people in Turkey see the present situation. They believe that Erdogan will not relent from his ultimate goal, which is to achieve absolute domination of the country, and he was in need to crush the opposition, both of the non-Islamist parties and of probably part of his own Islamist party.
Yeah.
And
I kind of compare this to, for those who are students of history, the 1933 Reichstag fire that apparently was set by the Nazis to bring them to power. And it you know,
precisely.
it's cynical,
and
but it's
effective. May I just make you notice that the Turkish parliament in Ankara has been damaged in the recent events, just like the Reichstag in Berlin in 1933.
That's right. That's right. It was shelled, in fact. So as you look at sort of this broader picture, Michel Garfinkel, you have the president of Turkey, an unabashed Islamist who seeks, I think he's been rather explicit about this, to restore the caliphate with himself, I guess, as the sultan. You have in the Islamic State, you have in Al-Qaeda, you have in Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and others of the violent jihadist sort, and of the Muslim Brotherhood's civilization sort, these immigrants pouring across the border, many of them from Turkey or at least passing through Turkey, changing the demographics, changing the political environment, changing the security situation in countries like yours, France. Give us a sort of overview of the extent to which we now face truly a civilizational crisis at the hands of these Sharia-adherent jihadists, and what would you be recommending in France and more generally in the West we should do about it?
First of all, I believe that 50% of the problem is that the West has lost faith and confidence in itself. And the first thing to do is to reassert a sense of a common civilization which is worth to be defended, and in each individual Western country, a sense of nationhood. And I believe this is what, in fact, things like Brexit in England or the rise of many nationalist parties in Europe is about. People have a sense that everything which is over multinational, multicultural, and so on has turned into a major danger to the very survival of the Western civilization as we know it. So this is the first point. I believe that the Muslim world itself is more complex than it is usually assumed. It's not, you see, the Islamists are using terror against us, non-Muslims, but they do use terror as well against Muslims and in Muslim countries as well. And I'm not sure about the what may happen really in the future. In many countries, there is in fact now a growing reaction against radical Islam. We see in some countries which are from theoretically seen as arch Islamist, like Saudi Arabia, we are witnessing the emergence of a westernized middle class, which is very moderate and which is certainly looking for much more proximity with the West. In Turkey itself, against the Islamist government in electoral terms has been based on the countryside and the rural exodus to the big cities. I'm not sure that this will last forever. And a lot of change may happen, but changes in the Muslim world, which would be a very important and very positive development, is conditional of steadfastness in the West, in Western countries. If the West is not reasserting itself as very steadfast against any threat, the Islamist threat, but maybe also the threat of other dictatorships like Russia, maybe China. If we are not very serious about that, and we are not able to have faith again in our own destiny and the worth and the value of our own civilization, we might be in a bad situation.
We will indeed. An excellent point on which to wrap up this very, very thought-provoking and, I think, highly illuminating conversation with you, Michel Garfinkel. I will just say that one other piece of this, it seems to me, is we need to be also helping those Muslims who do not want to be part of this Islamist program. And if there is indeed a backlash, getting them in a position to emerge as one of the beneficiaries of it would be a very sensible thing, and I think necessary as well. Michel, thank you for the work you do at Valeurs Actuelles and, of course, Jean-Jacques Rousseau Institute, the Middle East Forum, and for your visits with us from time to time. We look forward to having another one soon. In the meantime, stay well, my friend, and keep up your courageous and very important work. I hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afty. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.